Every year, PopTech brings together leading thinkers to share inspiration and ideas for igniting change and unlocking human potential. This podcast was recorded live at the PopTech Conference and is made possible with generous support from Lexus Hybrid Drive, with additional production support provided by Yahoo. For more podcasts, information on PopTech, or to learn how to participate, visit poptech.org.
Thanks a lot. Great. What I'd like to talk to you about is cities, really. I'm absolutely fascinated by cities. We're actually at a historic moment in the moment. In the whole of humanity, something like half of the world population is now living in cities. Now, that's an amazing change in the way that humanity is living. And what I think is incredible is that we don't really know what cities are. We all have an idea what a city is. But actually, cities are made up of people and the interactions we have with each other, the experiences we have. You know, all these people who are walking through a city, they're kind of with their heads down. They're going about their own business. And it's all the sounds, all the kind of visuals, all the kind of smells, all the experiences around them that are actually making up the city for them. And the thing is that these cities are incredibly fragile. A city like London, for example, only has enough food for 3 days. If, for example, there's no more food coming into London, the people in London suddenly starve. So cities are actually kind of consensual hallucinations, I would say. Okay? So 50% of the world population is living in these consensual hallucinations. Now, that is an incredible idea, right? Cities are kind of our concept more than anything else. And that's something I'd really like to show you some more stuff about. You know, if we look at a city, you know, a typical map like this, you know, there's no sense there's any people there. You see roads, you see conduits, you see places, you see basically traffic information. And I'm really interested in how we can start to represent people again and the kind of all the social interactions, all the subtleties of our lives, if you like. And I'm really fascinated by much older visions of maps. This is a beautiful map from 1613. And what you can see is, for example, all the rivers and all the trees are actually personified. They are actually embodied. And you can also see there's kind of activity on this map. You know, there's somebody kind of harvesting over here, somebody going hunting over here. And I think these are much more human-scale maps. There's a sense in which we are the landscape. And I think that's a really interesting way of thinking about maps. What I do is I do participatory sensory mapping. And I'll tell you what I really mean by that. For the last 4 years or so, I've been working with groups of people in local places. And this is a particular project I was doing with young people in a school. And basically, I blindfold young people, and I actually deafen them, so they can't hear or see. And I asked them to re-explore their local area. And the thing is, if you can't hear or see, the main thing you actually notice is actually smells. Now, we don't normally notice smells at all. And actually, being kind of forced to kind of engage in this, suddenly you're in a very different, you have a completely different way of looking at the world. So what was happening here is the pupils were going along for a walk, and they were being led along by another pupil who was taking notes. And they were talking about their sensory experiences. So here, for example, this is a little map from Newham Sixth Form College. And you can see the kind of things that people are talking about. You know, the wall was rough, bumpy, and hard, and I hurt my finger when I felt it. Smelt grass, and it felt nice after I smelt the poo and the smoke. You get a sense of this, right? I heard birds singing, and it sounded very peaceful. I feel the pavement, chicken chips, smell of petrol made me feel like throwing up. Felt okay because I trusted the person who was guiding me. Car fumes. It felt windy at this point. I could hear lots of noise around me like car sirens. I felt the sun and the cars on my right-hand side. Traffic, cars roaring past. So this is a completely sensory notion of the city. Okay? The kind of stuff we don't normally notice because we're too busy. We're just kind of rushing along. We're not really paying attention to how we really feel about this stuff. So this kind of map was actually made up of something like 30 school children in their local area. What was interesting about the sensations that they were recording is that something like 50% of them were negative, which is just incredible. Only 28% were positive. But these things actually cluster. So for example, these are the little blue dots here are actually positive sensations. So you have things like, we sat on a wet bench for a minute, it felt so cold because it was raining, the grass was wet, bumpy, and I could feel it brushing against my feet, heard birds. So you can start seeing patterns in these kind of maps, patterns of our perception, patterns of our experience. And you know, this is a very small area. If you see this little scale at the bottom here, that's 500 meters. So this is a very, very, very local map. But if you imagine kind of mapping large parts of the world like this, you have a completely different way of looking at the world around you. So this is a particular way of doing mapping. This is the main thing I want to talk to you about. This is a particular device I developed. I call it my biomapping device. And it's essentially based on the lie detector, which is a pretty scary thing. And it measures your physiological arousal. Okay, so it measures how your body is responding to the world. And the best metaphor I found is actually adrenaline. Okay, so there's certain things in the world that are causing adrenaline, that are causing you to react in certain ways. The thing is, I'm actually connecting this with a GPS unit, so you can see how somebody is feeling and where they are at the same time. So I've been doing these kind of community workshops for the last 4 years, wiring people up in this way. This is my oldest participant. He was about 85 years old, and he runs double marathons, which I was quite amazed by. and basically, I wire people up with this strange device, and I send them out for a walk in their local area. They go for a walk for something like an hour, and when they come back, we download the data, and we can start to visualize these kind of things in Google Earth. And you can see where somebody was going for a walk, but you can see the height of this particular track is actually their emotional response. So these are emotional maps, okay? And they are making sense of their own body's reaction to this. So this was a busy traffic crossing or the particular aggressive wasteland. This is, you know, 21st century Britain, and there's still open-cast mining happening in London, which is quite incredible. Or here, you can see a lot of these things are also social, you know, argument with mum by the supermarket over here. So these things are very located, you know. We have arguments in particular places, you know. These things are also about our own particular memory, you know. I normally have my driving lessons here. All these kind of things. These are personal stories. These are individuals' own stories of place. Now, what's really interesting is when people start talking about this. So often we sit around in a group of something like 10 people, and people start talking about their own stories. They're stimulated by their own little experiences they've just had going for a walk. But then they start talking generally about the place and what's really going on in that place. And all the kind of local issues suddenly start to emerge, if it's about the traffic, if it's about the pollution, whatever it might be. And we start looking at these communally. So what happens when we start looking at all these individual tracks and start overlaying them all together? So all these annotations are made by the people themselves. And what I do with this stuff is I publish these printed maps. So this is the Greenwich emotion map, for example. In England. And you can see a little bit of a detail. For example, there's the argument with mum here. So this is an emotional landscape, okay? So imagine there's an emotional landscape overlaying the whole of the world in this way, which is all our social interactions with each other. You know, difficult conversation, the roundabout appears over there. And lots of little stories start to emerge, stories about place. And I'm really interested in how these kind of maps start changing our vision of a particular place. For example, there's this particular cafe in this kind of area, which is going to be demolished with all the regeneration that's taking place there. And a lot of people were taking photographs of it. And it's a high arousal area. You can see the little red kind of contours there. So people cared strongly about this particular place. And I'm really interested in how these kind of visualizations of communal bodies can start allowing us to start having really interesting, informed discussions about how we should shape our local environment. This is a project I've just been doing in San Francisco. This is a two-month project, the San Francisco Emotion Map. And we had about 100 people take part. And you can see, because of the grid layout of the city, you can see a lot of the interactions are actually taking place at the corners of roads, where the streets are crossing. You can see all the little yellow circles, actually where people were making annotations, where all the social stuff was really happening. So for example, you know, jaywalking evangelists, saw McDonald's skateboarders, guys selling palms, Foxy Lady Boutique. Lots and lots of things happening, right? The whole range of different stuff. What was really particular about San Francisco, actually, which I'd never really encountered before, was things like, I was remembering a person I had a major relationship with whose parents lived here. At the Odeon, looking at an ex-girlfriend's house, a lot of people were feeling really strong arousal walking past their ex-partner's houses. Now, I do think that's something very particular about San Francisco and the Mission area. Which I thought was really fascinating, you know, all these things starting to pop up. Another thing that really I found incredible was there's an area of murals. People who know San Francisco, there's some very beautiful murals in these little roads that are hidden away, and they really started to appear, you know. There's really, you know, I really like the murals with the bears. There's lots of social interaction, lots of stuff going on. People feel really strongly about this. And these are kind of the hidden parts of cities that, kind of, as a tourist, you don't normally know about. But these were local people who were talking about the pocket parks, who were talking about the murals. And these are the real kind of hidden treasures of a place. And I'm really fascinated in how we kind of deal with these things. Now, what do we do once we have these kind of emotion maps? How do we move forward from this? This is a particular project I've just finished in Stockport, which is close to Manchester. Which I'd like to talk a little bit about. Here the context was, it was a pre-consultation project. I was actually working with the local council and with some of the local developers, and we were really trying to think about what's going on in this place. So before then, I'd often be kind of presenting these in kind of an art context, and that's all very well. You get kind of the usual middle-class people getting involved, and we really wanted to do something different. We really wanted to see what was going on in this place. So we were kind of doing the kind of the biomapping thing. So you have these kind of arousal bars at the top there. But we were also getting people to produce little drawings for us. So we were in the streets and we were talking to the full range of people, not just the usual kind of people who would come to art events. And we started looking at what's really going on. And the particular context of Stockport is that in the 1930s, they decided to cover up the river that was right in the middle of the city. And they actually covered this river up with this road. And this is Europe's widest bridge, actually. In the 70s, they covered it up with a whole shopping center. So people were drawing all these kind of shops. Shop, 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 top shop. And if you talk to young people in the city, there's no sense in which they know there's a river there at all. We talked to them, and something like 80% of young people did not know there was a river in their own town. In fact, they were walking over the top of it. And that was just crazy. And you can see, for example, here, the shopping area, you know, fairly low arousal, actually, whereas something like the old market was actually a high arousal area. People cared strongly about the old market. People were actually meeting each other. Those are still kind of the social interaction places. And this is something that really, you get a very rich sense of what really happens in this little town. There's only 3 restaurants in this town, and people tend to drink. And the funny thing is, because it's very close to Manchester, all the people from about 20 to about 30 go off to Manchester. So what you basically get is you get the very young and the very old. And there's a big sense in which the young people are really stigmatized. They're kind of called scallies and chavs. And they're basically blamed for all the antisocial behavior. And the biggest crime in Britain at the moment seems to be hanging around Okay. I don't know if what it's like around here, but there's millions of pounds being spent to stop people hanging around. And this is actually really, really visible. You know, we have huge amounts of drawings of basically working class kids hanging around. And how do you deal with this? So the big thing that's really missing in Stockport is some kind of public sphere. You know, there's people are only meeting in people are only meeting in commercial coffee shops. There's no sense of parks. There's no sense of kind of places where people are mixing with each other. So I'm really interested in how you can start to generate an idea of public sphere in a place and really kind of integrate these young people that are really being marginalized. You know, there's certain kind of places like this kind of area there that was called the Bear Pit. That was meant to be a public space, but actually it's a concrete enclosed space, and it's like a little mini amphitheater, but nobody actually uses it. And it's a very, very sad example of public space. And people were really talking about this, and it was a real point of contention. So I'm really interested in how these kind of very local maps allow us to reflect on our own personal behavior. You know, I actually, you know, imagine you walk along and you can see how you're actually feeling in different places. But also, if once you can see how other people are feeling in these places, how does that generate a really informed discussion? And how can you start changing these things? So, yep, this is kind of where I'm at, really. If you want to have a look at these kind of maps in detail, they're all on my website here. And you can really dig into them in a little bit more detail. So, yeah, I think that's me. Thanks very much.
Podcasts are recorded live at the PopTech Conference and are made possible with generous support from Lexus Hybrid Drive, with additional production support from Yahoo. For more podcasts, information on PopTech, or to learn how to participate, visit poptech.org. This podcast is licensed under the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Sharealike 2.5 license. For details, please visit creativecommons.org.